You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Now I'm recording.
Yeah.
All right, Dave's now recording. Hey, everybody, welcome to Triple Radio. This is Tim, that's Dave, that's Weiss.
Hello.
It's March 24th, 2026.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
I realize that a lot of times I don't say when it is, so it's like...
Like, we'll get the month, maybe.
Sometimes.
But usually it's right on the line.
Usually I just say like, oh, hey, welcome to Triple Radio, here's us, and then I don't say when it is, so if like, you know, in... 40 years down the road when people are finding our mislabeled MP3s out of some archive, they'll be like, well, trying to determine when Triple Radio was recorded because they never said the date until
when
now.
Historians are trying to determine the most accurate bellwether of high culture from this point in time.
And how to play an MP3.
Yeah, it turns out all our files were the only thing that survived.
Much like the Twinkie. Yeah.
Can I just say?
Or the Roach.
March 24th, finally got some good news today. Delighted to announce the death of Sora.
Yeah, that's how I opened the conversation with Tim as well.
Yeah. Oh, God, I am so happy. I am toasting to its poor health and,
I know,
just rejoicing in that it is the first one to drop. Here's to many more.
It's just nice.
That's what we said. Here's the many more.
I don't know. Like, I've run into so many people that casually use AI. So when something is like, oh, there's other people that hate this stuff, it's really nice.
It is really nice, right? Yeah. For anyone who might not know or might need a little refresher, this is OpenAI's video generation tool. And this is something that was to be, it has a standalone app, I believe just called Sora. ChatGPT has some Sora functionality built in, so you can use it to prompt some short videos. And a mere 3 months ago, OpenAI inked a deal with Disney that would license Disney's characters to be used on the Sora platform. And now all of that is just kaput because it turns out generative video is just a complete and total dog turd, not just artistically, but also financially. As it turns out, you can't really sell that at enterprise scale and turn a profit on it. So they are dropping it like a fucking soiled hot dog. And of course they are, because it was never going to work. And they have just been waiting to trim the fat. I believe it was probably just the most enticing fat to dangle in front of venture capitalists to get them to keep spending those bills, giving them to Sam Altman so that he can buy another house or something. Turns out they are pivoting hard. This is per Variety. There was an all-hands meeting last week in which employees were told, we are pivoting away from side quests, as they put it, and focusing on coding at enterprise scale, which apparently is the one thing it might do well.
Are they pivoting away from video? I thought we were pivoting to video. That's why we're here, right?
Yeah, I know, right?
I was told.
A tech company pivoting away from video. Crazy. As short-form video becomes the dominant form of internet consumption, turns out this one just consumes too many goddamn CPU cycles to be worthwhile.
Something I learned in the last couple hours, apparently Sora dies in Kingdom Hearts 3. I mean, this is an old game at this point. Not that I was image searching or anything, but that's what DuckDuckGo told me.
Yeah, spoilers. Yeah. Very funny.
Kingdom Hearts?
Very funny Kingdom Hearts jokes coming out of this.
Kingdom Hearts 4 is the one they're supposedly making now, right?
Assumably. But it got confusing because of the chains and the 360s and the...
me never paying that series very much mind.
Yeah, all I care about is Goofy getting hit in the head with a rock. It was the
all the best stuff happened in certain moments in Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah.
Goofy getting clobbered with that rock in the Tron levels.
Yep.
And someone in the room farting as Simba rocketed off of Pride Rock.
Yes, that's right.
That was it. That was it.
Yeah.
I'm going to play
like that.
one of those games with my kids one day. One of those first two games, I think, probably.
I've even after playing the second one, I'm like still kind of curious to play the first one. Mm-hmm. I mean, people love those games.
It was just like the gameplay action was just so boring at the time.
Yeah. Action RPG stuff is, you know, fun, and I'm not against it.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. It's just
not into that art style, too. The only one I liked was a DS game.
I can go grab the Kingdom Hearts 1.5 plus 2.5 HD something collection.
Not that that's confusing.
That's also one of the things that turns me off from that series is just reading the names of the games.
Yes.
just the ones that aren't just name and number.
Right.
Just gosh. Yeah. That's so cool.
March 24th.
Yeah. It's March 24th. Yeah. I saw that. Another, because apparently tech news is how we open these shows right now, because it's always happening. Well, there was a bunch of layoffs at Epic today.
A thousand.
Yeah. Because they have
to. Incredible.
Yeah. Because apparently Fortnite isn't making enough money anymore, which, you know, they had to raise the price of V-Bucks like a month ago because they can't pay them bills. So now they laid off a bunch of people over there at Epic, which is like, oh, so the most successful game can't maintain its employee level. This seems like a problem. I don't know.
It's sad for industry, you know, super like three sad. Word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I am not a person that hates Fortnite as a game or a platform necessarily. I don't necessarily believe it deserves the level of derision that one should probably reserve for something like Roblox. It subsumed a lot of talent. You know, that's where the Harmonix team ended up building the most recent version of the Rock Band engine is within Fortnite. And so while I guess I don't blame any particular publisher for wanting an ongoing game that can be so many things to so many people, it's more of a live service platform than it is a singular game. This is just another demonstration that maybe that business model doesn't really work.
I mean, what was that called? Highguard? That shut down after like a few weeks or like 2 months or so. God, that was so sad. Just they were like, well, they did like a last content patch with like, here's a new character and here's all this stuff and this tech tree stuff and the game's over next week. And you know, you had Concord, which shut down after like a month last year, or the year before, something like that. Actually, my child, I just recently allowed him to start playing Fortnite on his Twitch too. So Fortnite is very, very recently coming into my home. And you know, he's not asked me to give him money to buy V-Bucks. So that's good. The thing has its own parental controls within the Switch too. So his time is capped within Fortnite, and he has to ask me for more time within Fortnite, and that's just Fortnite. So I can just cut him off for Fortnite and still let him play around with other Switch games, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Because Patrick Klepek, who runs a parent-focused game blog called Crossplay, has gone on at length, you know, about Roblox and how much, you know, kind of the parental controls of Roblox suck, but like he can't avoid it in his house because all of his kids' friends play Roblox and like, you know, he's involved in that and just kind of comparing, you know, Fortnite is the other big one and how Fortnite was better about certain things, but now Fortnite, like one of the big differences before was that in Fortnite, you couldn't have like microtransactions within like custom game modes. And now you can. And this has been a big thing in Roblox forever is that like you'll spend money within a game within Roblox on just like bullshit.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a long time, Fortnite, it was just, you know, skins and stuff outside of those games. And that's where they made the money. But now they're trying to monetize things within those game modes. And that's where I guess things get dicey for children and just how it services microtransactions. But, you know, I'm just kind of like, you just, you know, just watch what you're doing on there, bud.
Yeah. No, just looking for the amount of Roblox, like, content creators and people looking for, like, video editors. I've been in the running for multiple. Jeez. Like, because it's just, it's a service. It's, you know, like, it might as well just be a platform at this point. Oh, even more than Minecraft, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, more than Minecraft. But,
Roblox is a rock hard no in this house. Which is, when people around, every now and then, like, someone at school will ask kind of, like, what regulations I have on my kid at home. And I'm always like, he has zero unfettered YouTube access. Zero. None. Very little even after that. It's like sometimes he can watch stuff on the PlayStation, which has to be in my account, and it's on the TV in the living room. And no Roblox. And the other teachers / parents are just like, what? I'm like, you can just not let them do those things. It's crazy.
It's weird. It's wild.
You just don't let them, like, I tell them, I'm like, Roblox is the worst. They do not have the safety rails in place to protect your child from people who might do them harm, and psychological damage that it's just bad. Roblox is just not good, and they don't care about making it safe for kids at all. At least with Fortnite, there appears to be a solid attempt. Like, I have a lot, like, a whole parental control suite for it, for, like, keep him on lock, and I feel okay about it. So, yeah, I never really worry about him getting into trouble on the Nintendo Switch, because everything is already so not there to, like, let you communicate with people that you even know.
Yeah.
So it's like,
even for adults, it's difficult just to do the basic stuff.
How do you add a friend? I'm sure that's got a better question.
He's added friends from Splatoon, just people that he's played with, but, you know, I don't know. I don't even think they can even message him. It's just, you just see what they're playing or whatever.
Well, transition into what are you guys playing at this point?
Our industry armchair minute.
If I hear that dead silence, I'm like filling that void.
I was just sipping some water.
Of course. That was my visual cue.
That was me letting you know I have nothing else to say, so I'm in the pipes. Let's talk about, I guess, one of the big games of the moment, which is Pocopia.
Because you got that Switch 2.
It is a Switch 2 exclusive, which I didn't realize until, basically like a week or two before it came out. And I was like, I bet you that's going to sell a lot of Switch 2s.
On the reverse, I have friends that are not happy about the Switch 2 only not having the physical choice. So it is hurting some harm.
I have more or less decided that I'm probably just going to be digital only on Switch 2, because whatever. My kid does not care about physical stuff at all. Really, it's just in his way, because then he has to switch cartridges if he wants to play a different game, and that's work when he could just be flipping between stuff. I get that.
On that quick side diversion, I tried to charge up the Switch Lite so that I could hand it to my wife the other night and be like, hey, you want to play your favorite game, Tetris Effect? You can just chill on the couch and play it right here. The Switch Lite is the third Switch in the house. And so ever since the most recent SIPs, ever since the system updates that changed everything to the digital game key card system we were soundly told, like, nope, you just can't play this game on this console anymore. Like, you need to transfer owners, and like what? I had to kind of do a deep dive into, like, how do I juggle games across three Switch consoles? And it's totally possible, but they obscure it. Like, they make it so difficult to find this on your own. It's like a setting buried several menus deep down in the settings menu to just be like, no, just let me play a game that's installed on the system. Don't bother with it. Just, I own it. It's installed on the system. Just let me play. Like, would you like to just play this game? Yes. Would you like to just kind of ignore the digital keycard system? Tick box. Yes. That's pretty much all it is. And I'm like, what the fuck are we even doing here?
What the fuck are you even doing
here? You can just disable all that like a tick box and just be like, nope, I just want to play the game installed on this system.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I mean, in terms of installing and downloading, I think you do have to still juggle the licenses a little bit.
Sure, but like, yes.
I couldn't even boot up a thing that was already on my console.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Weird.
Anyways, Pokopia sure looks cool. And I don't have anyone in my house that is remotely interested in Pokemon, but I am having a hard time resisting the siren song that everyone's just talking about this game.
I bet you it's something that could get someone interested in Pokemon.
This
could be a gateway drug. Yeah, I wasn't really thinking about it that much. Because I was like, oh, yeah, that looks like a cute thing that my kid will probably enjoy. But I wasn't really interested in it for myself until, I don't know, like a month ago when I started hearing people say, like, oh, yeah, it was the team that made Dragon Quest Builders. And I was like,
that's what caught my eye.
I didn't know it was actually the same team.
Yeah, that's literally all I know about it.
Oh, it's a similar thing. I didn't know it was the same dev team.
Yes.
Oh, hell. Now I got to get it.
Yes. Yeah, it's basically Dragon Quest Builders 3. Yeah, it's great. I mean, the Dragon Quest Builders games, I played a good amount of 1, not as much of 2, just because it wasn't the right time, but 2 seemed like great. You know, those games had the building aspect, and they had some Dragon Quest like exploration and combat to them. These are more focused. A lot of people kind of look at this and they're like, oh, is this like Pokemon Animal Crossing? And that's like the analog they use, but it's not really. It is still, it feels in the way the world is designed and moving around and kind of how things work. Just, it is Dragon Quest Builders, but people haven't played those games. And you know, maybe get around to it at some point, but, yeah, because it's the same concept where they put you in kind of a ruined world. As I understand the setup for this game, which is kind of fucked up, it is Kanto region, which is, you know, Pokemon Gen 1, even though there's Pokemon from every generation in it. But it sounds like there was a major natural disaster, like a giant hurricane, and apparently people just dropped off all their Pokemon at the Pokemon Center and then evacuated without their Pokemon.
Oh,
like a bunch of fucking assholes. They're in balls. Bring your Pokemon with you, you shits. What are you doing? Leaving your best friends behind. So you have these Pokemon that are like, you know, like, oh, yeah, I remember when humans used to be around this area, but no one's been around for a long time. Like, you know, geez. And like, you know, everything's torn up and messed up. And you start like making little habitats that Pokemon will pop up in. And like, you'll see a rustling, you'll make a patch of tall grass and you'll see rustling and you go check it out. And like a Pokemon will pop out and now he's your buddy. And that's where he lives in that habitat. But, you know, you could build him a house. You could build him a big house to live with you or a bunch of his Pokemon buddies. And it's just like really positive vibes. You know, there's so much you can do. And initially, like, Richard was like really overwhelmed after like his first few hours. Cause he's like, Dad, I just have so much stuff to do. I can't play this game. I'm like, you just focus on one thing at a time, or just like do like what's in front of you that seems the most interesting. Don't worry about getting it all done. Cause there's an endless amount of stuff to do in this game. But you know, each area, so like you're in this initial area and then you can eventually move out to some other areas. Like each area, kind of the main quest is to get to a point where you can rebuild the Pokemon Center of that area. Mm. But like over course of doing that, you're going to like learn some techniques for like building, improving the world that you could then, you know, ultimately apply to building your own stuff. Like, you know, how moving water works and how electricity works and growing crops and this stuff. And as you go, like, and you find more Pokemon, you get their abilities, because you're a Ditto, which means you're a freak, and you have this human-like appearance, but then it's like, oh, you find a Pokemon that lets you, like, plant grass or, like, spit water or dig stuff up or break rocks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you get all these different abilities from them, which will change up, like, what you can do and what you can build and how you collect resources. And there's, like, it's just fun to sit and chill and do stuff. And, like, you always got like, new Pokemon, like, popping out of, you know, you'll find hints as to what kind of habitats you need to build by, like, arranging different items in the world. And you're figuring out, like, okay, well, how do I craft that so I can do this? Or where's a spot where I can do this to get this Pokemon to show up? And then sometimes, like, new Pokemon will just show up randomly. You'll be like, oh, shit, what's this guy doing here? And, you know, you can go down, like, all these paths of just, like, okay, well, today I'm going to go in and look for a bunch of resources to do this, or I'm just going to focus on building some habitats to see what new Pokemon show up, or I'm going to try to rebuild this town so it just looks nicer, or I'm going to build a bunch of new houses or whatever. There's just like a lot of stuff to do and play with. And it's just really, even though, you know, it is a game about doing chores, ultimately, it's just like a lot of fun and it's really relaxing. And yeah, it's great. It's really good.
Makes me want to boot up Dragon Quest. So I only own Dragon Quest Builders on PlayStation Vita. It certainly makes me want to boot it up. It's something I've always thought my kids would dig too. So I've been meaning to boot it up on my Vita TV. Or I'm sorry, my PS TV. And so that everyone can sit around the TV and watch and play. But
seems like something you'd be able to find for cheap for any system at this point. No,
it's even digitally. Okay. Both games are still pretty at full, but they almost never go on sale. They've been on my Deku Deals wish list for years.
Wow.
And they are still, I don't know, at least $40 most of the time.
Wow.
Yeah,
I've never
played. I was thinking of like physical copies of the game.
Yeah, like, yeah, I'm sure physical copies got to be at least that much, if not more.
It was low-key getting expensive. Oh, look what's 50% off on Steam right now, Dave.
What? Really?
And it's $13.99.
No. You could bundle the first one or the second one?
Well, you could bundle both of them together for $35.
Oh, I might do that. Sign in. Deku Just stay deals. Signed in. Steam, why do you always log me out?
I know. I'm kind of like, man, maybe do I want... No, I don't need... I have Dragon Quest Builders 1 on... I have Dragon Quest Builders 1 on PlayStation 4, and then I have Builders 2 on Switch.
Rebuy that shit.
I know. I probably should.
Well, apparently, the spring sale is coming to PlayStation tomorrow, because I am scrolling through the deals that have gone through early access right now.
Anyways, game is encouraging me to get back to... I don't know. It's just having a good time with it, but I'm looking forward to getting back to Dragon Quest Build. You know, going back to those games at some point, because I was just like, oh yeah, those were awesome. But I still have just so much content to explore in this game. It feels derogatory calling it content. Both games, man. How much cheaper are you going to find them?
Probably never.
We're not much cheaper, at least. I mean,
now I'm out $35. Very hard.
But you're up to Dragon Quest games. So it sounds good to me.
Guaranteed to drain my wallet of $35 right now, Tim.
Nah.
Well, while we're talking sales, I might have been the only one that bought something off the Playdate sale. Tim, did you buy anything?
I didn't. I held back because I was like, I still have stuff that I haven't played.
Well, because like kind of what we were...
I was going to ask.
I didn't want to get a... bunch, but I ended up getting 00 Perfect Stop, the train simulator from a couple of years ago, which I've never played one, but it was either one or in the category for both best music and best sound a couple years ago when it came out for like their community awards. And I'm like, okay, those are the things that will get me, as well as best use of crank, which can confirm, like it's such a chill game. Like, it's, imagine you've got the play date and you have the crank facing you, and you're making tiny little adjustments either to go faster or slower, and you're trying, you have a lot of meters that are kind of guiding you along the way. Music's great and all the audio is super chill. Also, I will say, because I bought an EV, So like when I'm charging my car for an hour, I'm just going to a coffee shop nearby and I can play this little train game.
That's nice. That sounds delightful.
It's very nice. So for, I think that was on for $4. I think that was a half off or more too.
I've added it to my wish list.
Yeah. And the advent of folders completely changes everything, as kind of predicted. Now that I have a folder of like, these are my most played games, these are the games that I want to play when I boot up the system, sort of thing. And again, if you haven't picked up Spilled Mushrooms, they gave free DLC, and I haven't even unlocked everything to get to the DLC yet, but that game is has those hooks, like you're falling asleep and you're thinking about like scenarios that could like work, sort of thing.
Yeah, I haven't picked up my play date in a bit. I'm due for some play date.
I mean, I like those sales because they're a really good excuse. They're paced out enough where I'm like, okay, I'll pay under $5 for a game that will get me back into the ecosystem of the play date, and then I'll poke around. And honestly, like the other game I was playing, which I literally beat earlier today, was Romeo is a Dead Man. So that has
You did get that. Yeah.
I did. I finally clicked with the combat about a couple chapters in ish. It takes a little bit because like they give you access to everything, but you kind of got to choose where you're dumping your money and being like, oh, okay, this makes sense. I'm just going to power these up enough and then go and do this. Basically, once it gets to like a nice even flow, it's pretty good. Like the writing is still like this era of Suda, which is like it's good, it's wacky, but I wish it was like Killer 7 No More Heroes were so perfect. I don't know if we're getting back to that, but it's still super fun and feels like someone actually doing something original, you know. Like right now. And it was a Epic Games, man. Tying back to that, I think.
Ooh.
I know.
Yeah, but well, that's in the backlog for this year. I was gonna say, speaking of train games, I did play that Dench Attack.
Because you got that demo for that.
That's a demo that I meant to try out. Yeah, but I didn't get the chance. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of that?
I thought it was sick as hell.
I can't wait.
I'm really looking forward to that game. Yeah, I mean, people said it. You could say it just by looking at it, just like huge, massive Dreamcast energy. You're just a game where you're driving a train and doing tricks and flipping between rails, and it's about, you know, with really good music, and it's just has that so much style to it.
And well, because they did that music trailer, and like anyone that has the guts to do that type of like music trailer with that variety, like I was like, not only obviously Jet Set, but like you got Richard Jock in there who gave to Jet Set, but also Sonic R and like all that shit, you know.
Yeah, that's a June game, I believe, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
The demo was sitting on my Steam Deck waiting to be played.
Yeah, you could. It's funny. I had the demo installed here, and then eventually I ended up downloading it and playing it on my Switch too. Because I was just like, it's in front of me, I'll do it.
Didn't even think to
something
look there for a demo.
Yeah, that's definitely one that I'll probably be day one grabbing. I have a long list of other demos that I have downloaded and not yet touched on here.
Anyone try the demo for Wild Blue Skies, the Star Fox game, Star Fox clone, Star Fox looking game?
No.
Oh, all right. It's pretty good.
Yeah, hear my keys typing as I look up Wild Blue Skies.
Blue Skies, yeah. No, this is probably of all the Star Fox clones out there, this is the one that's been getting the most traction. I believe it's being published by Humble, so they're putting a big advertising push behind it. And sure enough, it feels real good. Feels a lot like Star Fox 64. In fact, I put it up against three other Star Fox clones. I played them all back to back. One called Astro Dogs, one called Fur Squadron Phoenix, and then X Zodiac, which is one that I had already played.
X Zodiac. Well, it's not even out yet. Still, the game's in early access.
X Zodiac.
Yep.
Wow. Totally rules.
It does. It's really good.
Yeah. I mean, of the four of them, X Zodiac and Wild Blue Skies come closest to Star Fox, to being like unofficial Star Fox sequels, with X Zodiac obviously leaning way more toward Super NES style Star Fox, and Wild Blue Skies is very, very N64-ish. Mm-hmm. Although some weird, odd inconsistencies and imperfections in Wild Blue Skies that left me a little like, yeah, I hope they work on this before release. But otherwise, very cool stuff.
Why do I know that name? Chuhai Labs, I guess. Curse to Golf. That's what they made.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I think they also made that surfing game on Playdate. Like the Whitewater.
Oh, yeah.
Like the first game you played on your Playdate.
Wow, yeah. I was going to say. Yeah, I don't remember the name of that. You were much better at that than I was. I gave up.
Yeah, I got some, landed some tricks.
Yeah.
Grave Dodgers just came out from them. Yeah. Anyways, What do I so, games I'm interested in, but have not. Oh, wait, I did download the Wild Blue Skies demo. It's right there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was under, I have the Panzer Dragoon remake demo. Demon Tides, which is a 3D platformer, indie 3D platformer.
Yeah.
Vampire Crawlers.
From the makers of Bubsy.
Oh, God. The Vampire Crawlers, which is the Vampire Survivors, like, dungeon crawler thing. Mm. Rack Coin, the Coin Pusher. Roguelike.
Yes.
Zero Parades, which is the Zero Time Dilemma. Oh, Zero Parades for Dead Spies. That's what it is. Like, that's like the Zero Time Dilemma Disco Elysium mashup thing. Okay. Yeah, I mean,
interesting.
I think, I don't remember whether it's like those teams or it, I know it's definitely like Zero Time Dilemma guy, and I don't remember. That's what it looked like.
Kind of a slight tangent. Dave, have you seen the anything about Devils on the Moon yet, since you don't watch Playdate stuff?
No.
You should probably check that out. So that's their pinball game coming up that they've been putting a lot of work into. I think it's out literally in a couple days.
Ooh, occult pinball action. Oh, that looks great.
Yeah, it looks really
look
good.
Look at that. That looks sick as hell.
Oh yeah, that's on my wish list already. I don't even got to click.
Yeah, same. No, they did some community awards, and they did two blocks of trailers, and they're definitely worth checking out just for some cool original stuff. Oh. But I feel like this is kind of the one leading a lot of packs right now. Yeah,
Amano, they made Cacha Diablos, Devils on the Moon, Pull Frog, Don Salmon.
Yeah.
Lost Night.
Mm-hmm.
Virus. Virus.
Pull Frog has a
Pico 8
demo that is a very satisfying little puzzle game.
Yeah. Moving on.
Yep.
I also talked about Mugenix last month. Still,
yes.
I think Mugenix is probably still my most played game in March overall. It's a very, you know, I have put 60 hours into that game at this point, I want to say. And I don't feel it at all, really. My percent counter is at like 32-33%, which is insane. At its core, you know, there's all the gross cat breeding, gross cat, like, poopy peeing fetuses, like tumors, like, you know, weird shit that Ed McMullen like puts in his games.
Right.
But at the core of it, you know, it is this roguelike tactics game that is just so fun to just keep going back to and playing. And I think you know, I didn't get as hard into the breach as some people, mm-hmm. because I think like the PC version hit at the right time, but that was before the Steam Deck was a thing. So I didn't really end up playing a lot of it. And by the time it came to like Switch or whatever, where it would be more convenient to play it, I didn't get to put a lot of hours into it.
But yeah, I'm surprised, actually.
Yeah, that's a problem that's waiting to happen at some point. I see, the Switch version. Yeah, I have not forgotten about that. But I imagine the feeling that I get out of Mugenics is pretty similar to what people got out of Into the Breach, where, you know, you have these small... It's Into the Breach, I know the encounters were smaller and you had, like, just less units and the maps were smaller. Not that they're huge in Mugenics, but it is this gradual putting together the puzzle of how you are going to make your cats and the abilities they get work to have a successful run. And there is enough variation to the classes and the abilities that you get and the stuff that happens that I am constantly satisfied with the results of when I find some new thing that is just broken enough that I can bend it to my will. There was a run I had recently where I like the druid class can like turn into different animal forms. And there's like one that I'd seen come up a couple times where it's like, oh, form of monkey. And I'd look at it and I look at the stats and it's like, oh, you get it. And then you can throw poop at enemies. I'm like, that doesn't seem like, yeah, you throw shit at them, like whatever. But eventually I ended up taking it because there was no other good options. And then I realized in using flinging of poop, because I just thought you like flung a turd at a enemy. No, you throw like a spray of turds at a part of the map. And then those turds are sentient and will fight for you.
Okay.
And that druid already had an ability that made all of his familiars get a stat bonus across the board. So this was a run that I thought was not going to like end up making it to the end, where suddenly it was like, oh, I'm throwing out this army of superpowered turds every time he gets a turn. And also if it's a large enemy, like a boss enemy that takes up more than one square, it's getting hit like four times by the turds on impact.
Nice.
And now I'm by the turds and I'm using my cleric to give him extra attacks. So I'm flinging two handfuls of shit at a boss every turn, doing like almost 100 damage. And it's just like, and then the boss is surrounded by my little shits who are then attacking him or taking attacks for me. And I'm like, this is so good. I just love that shit where it's like, oh, this isn't going so well. I don't know. These cats are kind of not like coming together. Then all of a sudden it's like, I can't be touched. And it's just fucking busted. And it's great. And there's just enough like weird stuff and variation and things that I learn along the way that there was like some weeks where it's like, man, I played a lot of Mugenics this week. This is a problem. But now it's just kind of like, okay, because runs do take a while. Mm-hmm. They can take like a few hours or a couple hours, I guess I should say. And yeah, if you die, you
die in real life.
It fucking sucks because your cats are dead. So you don't have your cats coming back the house to breed. You lose all your items. Like it's rough. And it can be demoralizing, but playing at a good pace of like kind of doing a couple runs here and there during the week or as it ends, it just like feels like it's moving along at a really good pace. And I'm not, you know, putting it down yet after 60 hours, still chugging along.
Yeah.
Great game.
Love that. Sounds delightfully silly.
It's so, it's so gross.
Compellingly addictive.
Yeah, absolutely. I forgot to mention last month or maybe the month before that I had played some of Once Upon a Katamari. That's the new Katamari game.
Oh.
That came out last year.
Yeah. Okay.
The new one.
Right.
The one without the guy that made it, right? Or
maybe, probably.
Okay.
Hasn't been on one since the second one, right?
Yeah, I don't think he's really
there. Okay, I thought that he was like pulled in and this was like but I could have been wrong. Okay.
Oh.
I don't know if he was. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But this is. The
I mean,
first
I only one. Really care about the first two.
Yeah, this is the first so wholly new one that they've made in a long, quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think the PS2 ones are still the best. But
ooh, it's the first original console installment since Touch My Katamari in 2011.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's been a long time. It was a long
That's a long time.
Yeah, no, this and I like the theme of it and that you're going through different historical eras. So that Ooh. Gives, you know, just some opportunities to do some different stuff. Yeah, it's a Katamari game. And it's fun in the way Katamari games are. And I really wish the King of All Cosmos would shut the fuck up sometimes.
Oh,
like
man.
The you know, that was kind of a joke. In like the early ones where it's like, oh, he pops up on the screen and he's talking and it's getting in your way. And, you know, the funny banter before and after missions. And this time I'm kind of like, okay, I've seen. Yeah, shut up. I got it. Like, I know you're kind of an aloof dick. I'm good.
Yes.
I just want to wad some stuff up into my life. and it's good for that, though. Yeah. Like I said, I don't think it surpasses the early ones. Those are probably just the Katamaris that you need. And that's it.
Because
some of these missions where nothing is like super poorly designed in terms of the missions, but sometimes I'll be going, you know, it'll be like, okay, see how big you can make it in like, you know, this really short amount of time. Like you have to roll very quickly or, you know, some very like short form things, or you have to like roll up, you know, you have like specific objectives of things you need to roll up or like the volume of things you need to roll up or whatever. And there's power ups. And sometimes I'm just going through these levels. I'm just like, can I just have one where I got like 10 minutes to make it real big?
Yeah.
That's that's all I want. I don't
that's
want
all I ever want
some 3 minute level. Yeah. I just want.
You know what weren't my favorite? The astrology levels that collect every crab, you know, like,
yeah, those.
Sorry.
I like some of them in We Heart Katamari.
I like some of them, but like, that's not why you're playing.
No. So it's like getting so many of those in a row. Like, you know, you kind of go to each time era and then it's like, okay, well, this is the old Japan version. Here's the pirate version. Here's the Roman Empire version. I would say rolling up the like Greek philosophers was, I thought, very funny.
That's fun. I like that.
It was fun and funny. But sometimes it's like, yeah, I just want, just please give me a timer and let me go nuts in a level. I don't like short form Katamari as much, but it's there and it's good for a, you know, it's a good Katamari's good. So you can't really go too wrong. It just doesn't hit the spot quite as well as it did when it was new 20 years ago. What do you want?
Right.
Oh, shit. I talked about me.
Hey, what are you?
Speaking of throwbacks to PlayStation 2 era, I have been meaning to, with the recent re-release of Soul Calibur 3, on PlayStation platforms as a PlayStation classic. Yeah. I've been meaning to revisit that game because I never really played it at all. And it's great. I love it. Like, I got to like reading some reviews and people now were like calling it this kind of lost gem. Like, some people considering it like a real high point in the series, mostly in terms of like player speed.
It was fast
like compared to 4, which I guess really slowed down game movement. Yes. And everything felt kind of more plodding. People really seem to love 3, surprisingly. So yeah, I've been booting that shit up and it's great. I love it. It's like this, it's kind of like an alternate history 2. You know, it's like this second version of Soul Calibur 2 that I've never played before. So I'm getting to experience it completely afresh. And I love it. It's just really good. It's kind of exactly what I want from Soul Calibur, which is 2, but different.
Yeah, I think that's the hard. That's also like the hard part of like when it came out, especially 2 being fresh in our minds.
Yes. And yeah.
It felt, I don't know, like thin, I guess is the word that comes to my mind when it came out. Like
Yeah, I mean,
I'd say at the time I was a little disappointed in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I feel like the quest mode, whatever, Chronicles of the Sword. Yeah. Like, you know, I just wanted Edgemaster mode again.
Yeah. Right.
I can see how in retrospect people are enjoying going back to it more, because that was before they started adding guest characters. It was before they added like super moves and like armor break stuff. So it was kind of, I want to say, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, I don't think any of that stuff was in that game, but it's kind of the last classic, like,
yes,
fewer frills Soul Calibur.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it feels. And it is such a refreshing return to be able to just sort of go back to the basics of Soul Calibur. Mm-hmm. And enjoy those fundamentals in a game that is just, yeah, fast and slick and very pretty. I remember at the time thinking that like the PlayStation 2 versions weren't really a patch on the slightly higher quality visuals of the GameCube, the beloved GameCube version of Soul Calibur.
Oh, that's right. There was only one version of 3.
It was only one version of 3 on PlayStation 2. Yeah, only the PS2
version, and that, I think, rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Yeah, yeah. But rendered in HD, you know, when you double, triple the resolution on those polygons, the art direction in this game is gorgeous. It's colorful as hell. Okay. Like, it's bright, bold colors. It's so many colors. Like, in the way that the Dreamcast game was, like, we kind of weird, vibrant colors in a lot of points, and you're just kind of like, wow, that's very pretty. That's what this game is like. In ways that, you know, if future Soul Calibers, once they moved the game over to, what are they building it on? Unreal Engine, I think.
Just assume it's Unreal 5, well, like everything, I mean, I guess.
Soul Calibur 6 came out quite a while ago.
Yeah.
I really liked Soul Calibur 5. I didn't play 6, and 4 was like, meh. 5 had a really, like, they had Eminence Orchestra out of Australia do the music, so, like, that music alone is really cool to look up.
Well, I remember, 4 I remember enjoying, but it's also, I'm going to say, marred by the Star Wars characters being in it that just felt super out of place.
I always mix up 3 and 4 because of that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I remember 5 had Ezio in it, which was awesome, but I mostly hated 5. I really didn't like 5. Well, I remember we talked about that because dig up ancient episodes of the podcast.
Sure.
I wasn't living with you guys anymore, so I didn't, like, you guys were playing it multiplayer, like, in the house, and having a good Soul Calibur time, and I was mostly just playing it by myself and not having as good a time with it. Six, I did play, I reviewed that game, and I thought 6 was pretty great.
I like 6 a lot. 6 is kind of, 6 has been my go-to on my Steam Deck if I just want to pick up and play some Soul Calibur real quick. 6 is lovely. It is perfectly cromulent Soul Calibur.
Fun cast. Some good DLC care. It's 6, also the number of dollars it costs on sale right now.
Worth a grab. Mm-hmm. I've been playing some other games, but we can keep cycling through. Tim, what else you got?
The only other thing I've been playing is Resident Evil Requiem.
I have talked plenty of this. I have not played, but now the Resident Evil games that I want to play list 7 and 9 right now.
So, Tim, how badly are you just dying to get DLSS 5 running so you can yassify those characters just ASAP?
I stopped playing and started saving to get a new graphics card for my computer, so that I could rebuy the game and shine those characters up.
Oh, man.
I'm glad I ducked out of the second they started posting those. I'm just like, I don't even have the energy for this.
Yeah, Digital Foundry selling out all of its credibility.
So that's a total bummer. Unfortunately, that whole shit show. But I bought
the game when it came out. So this game was actually really hard to find a physical copy of in stores.
Yeah,
Pocopia also hard to find in that case, a game key, you know, whatever, the physical right. shell that they sell you in stores for that game.
Yeah.
We just weird. Just games selling out all of a sudden. I had to slum it over to GameStop to get Resident Evil Requiem.
You took a shower after.
Yeah. Especially the Thruway Plaza location. You know. But yeah, and then it took me like 2 weeks to actually finally get to play it. Because, you know, it's a spooky, scary horror game. And I ended up taking a sick day from work, and then I started it in earnest. And now actually my PS5 is here at my desk. I took it off the TV and I hooked it up to my monitor here so that I can play it over here without freaking out any young children. Even though I don't know. Zombies are like the worst thing for him, or they were when he was, that was what he was most scared of in the world.
Interesting.
Was zombies when he was little, terrified of them. And I don't know how much that has gone away, though he kept saying, like, no, it's fine. Like, whatever, I'm playing it in here. Okay. Freaking Resident Evil. My God, these games. So you have this one is, as people may have heard, this is like split up into mm-hmm. two parts. There are the parts you play as Grace, who is this scared, terrified, less combat focused or ready FBI agent. She is who you mostly start playing the game as. Most of the beginning of the game is her. And then you switch over to fucking dumbass one-liner action hero Leon. For you pop into his shoes a little bit early on, just for some rootin' tootin' shootin' catharsis, but he doesn't take over in earnest until kind of the back half of the game.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, I'm having a good time with it. Really good time with it. It is some good Resident Evil nonsense. You know, this is not high art in terms of like story and character and whatever, but I was gonna say it is high art in terms of like how you make a fun video game, like you put a fun video game together. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't really remember the story beats of Resident Evil 4, but I remember that game being good as hell, just being so fun. And the set pieces from it and everything. And that's
right.
Probably more. I mean, we'll see where the story goes in this one. You start out as Grace, and the first part, you're supposed to play Grace as first person. I chose to play as third person just because could say, you know, kind of as I was getting to the end of it, I was like, man, this really would have hit harder as a horror game from first person. I just don't like both having to, because first person is not my like preferred perspective for playing a video game generally. So both having to, you know, play a game in first person and be careful about my resources are two things I can deal with, one or the other. So I was like, no, I'm gonna pop her out into third person. But I will acknowledge that, yeah, playing her first person is probably the way to go for maximum effect. It's just a personal preference. Like, I mitigated it in Resident Evil 8 by just bumping the difficulty down to easy, and had a fucking awesome time playing that game. So fun. So just seeing that they had the option of like, you know, I'm just gonna play as third person, that's just how I prefer, it's fine. But the way she is in this, eventually, you know, kind of the main first area, it's basically like a classic Resident Evil mansion or police station or mansion, like in Resident Evil. I'm thinking of like the Resident Evil 1 mansion, like the police station, Resident Evil 2, the whatever building you were in Resident Evil 0, where it's like you have a kind of a lobby area in the middle, and then you're going to kind of work your way through the downstairs and the upstairs and the rooms on either side, like, you know, east wing and west wing.
Yeah, yeah.
Unlocking doors and navigating creatures and monsters and figuring out how to, like, get all the pieces you need in order to move forward out of the building. But it's supposed to take place from first person, which would be evoke more of like a Resident Evil 7 style of play, where you have to, like, really creep around and, like, watch out for enemies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so basically like a Resident Evil 1, but in first person is kind of what they're going for there. Something that's really kind of neat about the beginning is they have the conceit that it seems like all of the staff of in this care facility, like, were just turned over or just affected in some way that made them into monsters recently. So they have, like, you know, they retain, like, what they did while they were still alive, or some piece of that.
Okay.
And they have behaviors that play into that, where it's like, if you kill a zombie in a corridor and it makes a bloody mess, like, the maids that would clean the place will, like, freak out and be like, you'll hear them screaming, like, mass, and, like, coming to clean up the mess. Or if you fuck with the lights, there's, like, guys who, like, will keep coming around to turn the lights off to keep it dark, make it harder to see. Certain enemies respond differently to the lights. So you have different enemies with, like, they're not just, you know, mindless zombies, but they have kind of, like, routines and behaviors.
That sounds very cool.
It is very cool. And this is, like, kind of one of the weaknesses of the game, is it makes you wish that they had developed just the beginning of it out into a full game rather than switching gears halfway through. Because, I mean, you know, by games 20 years ago standards, you basically have a full, almost Resident Evil game that is just Grace, like, doing that stuff at the beginning, where you have, like, the main mansion and then a couple areas afterwards.
I was really drawn to the split gameplay idea, though. Like, I feel that is more appealing to me than having, like, two separate games.
And let me tell, because, like, when you're playing as Grace, you only ever have a handgun. Well, like, Leon hands you his, like, Magnum, which you have very limited ammo for. But other than that, like, you're only mean, like, you just have a handgun for shooting the enemies, and then you have to, like, inject them if you want them to go away forever, because that's kind of mechanic like the Resident Evil remake did, where they will come back to life again as a stronger version of the enemy. So there's some corpse management going on there. And they inject, like, you know, a large creature that will kind of menace you and chase you around and shit. Kind of a couple of those. So you only have that pistol as Grace. So when, on those occasions when you switch gears to Leon and he's just fucking going nuts, just stronger gun, karate kicking. He has an axe that he's just splitting heads open with. That's some really good feeling catharsis right there. Let me tell you what.
I thought you were about to criticize that as feeling like it feels too much like a different game.
No.
That just
in those moments, like, early on, it feels real good to be Leon. And
that was my hope.
Yeah, very important. Because there's a certain point where you go through those same areas that Grace was just in, and you can just fucking murder everything so easily. It's like, I don't have to watch out for nothing as Leon in this setting. But then when you switch over to Leon proper in his portion of the game, like, it was a little bit of whiplash because the zombies were much more difficult to deal with, like, initially. And I was just like, shit, like, why is this so hard? Like, they, you know, they weren't like the zombies in the care center, like, one shot to the knee and they would go down for me to, you know, jump kick them.
Right.
But that these weren't going down as easily, you know, gun wasn't as powerful. But after I got into a few, they just literally make it so the more kills you get, the more currency you get for upgrading your guns. They just give you a magic bracelet that, like, yeah, you get points for killing zombies.
And oh, right. Start, I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Once you start upgrading your guns, then it starts to, it's like, oh, okay. And it's not like it's a cakewalk, but then it's more the Resident Evil 4 style. Like, I'm in this set piece encounter and I have to kind of manage all the stuff that's running around coming at me, and like when I'm using this ammo or that ammo or what's going on with it. So yeah, I'm now having a good time in a completely different way, doing Leon stuff. But okay. Yeah, his writing is so fucking stupid. Just, he has a line for everything. And it's great. And yeah, so I'm just having a really fun time with
this
it.
This party's dead. Like, just a lot of lame one-liners. Like,
Yeah. Yep. Great. Yep. Just stuff like that. And that's the Leon experience. See, I think I'm getting on. I don't know how much more of the game I have left. I kind of finished the first area. Like, with Leon, you're in Raccoon City. I mean, they showed it in the trailer.
Okay, I wasn't sure if I knew that one, but yeah.
Yeah, you're in bombed out Raccoon City. So I assume I am getting close to the police station. I assume, because they showed that in like the first trailer too. I assume I'm gonna go in there and revisit some of that shit. Mm-hmm.
Like, this is very popular with staff and patrons alike. Like, people, I have friends that this is their favorite Resident Evil game now. Like, this is top of the stack. So,
yeah. I mean, it's high bar. Like, a little bit of everything in there, you know?
You got
your kind of more intense horror stuff, the first person stuff, and then you just have the Resident Evil 4 stuff that everybody loves. I mean, what
the
I like
mix of 2 and 4, kind of, I guess, with the split. Yeah.
Like, 8 kind of, like, it was all first person, but it changed gears enough that it's like you had some areas that, like, early on, it felt very much like Resident Evil 1, like when you're in Dimitrescu's castle and you're kind of going around and doing that sort of thing. And then there's the very, like, PT focused section when you're in the dollhouse area. Which is a fucking nightmare. And then it starts to kind of get more action heavy, like a 4, where you're just blasting werewolves and running around in these areas and stuff like that. So that had a lot of balance and variety too, but like, I feel like this has even more and maybe nails like the early Resident Evil, like, kind of. One thing I'll say is I wish it was a little more puzzle solvey. Like, nothing really stumped me so far. It's just, I can recognize, it's like, oh, okay, I go to this side of the building and I can recognize, oh, I found this item and I know exactly where I need to use it. And there's no, like, not even like a slide puzzle or I need to move these statues around sort of thing. It's just kind of like, oh, go put the item in the thing and then you're good. So it's,
I'm
just
cool with that, but I also feel like, yeah, when it's perfunctory, that can be annoying too, where it's like, just don't even put it in there.
I mean, they definitely should. I just could have used, like, that is an area where I could have stood to have a little bit more friction. Just like a couple puzzles that push back on me a little more, I'd be like, okay, I'd feel just a little more complete about it. Some really good, I don't know, the basement of the care center might be like my favorite part so far. Just really fucking shitty area. Parentheses positive. I mean, obviously that game is popping off in a big way and is, you know, still just even playing it, I'm like, man, it's really making me jones to like go back and play. I've seen a lot of people going back and playing Resident Evil 1, like the PlayStation version, which I'm just like, you know what? I've never actually played the PlayStation 1 version of Resident Evil 1. I've always played the remake.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that GameCube remake is so
good. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know that remake is remade off of the remake.
Yeah, I've never played the original one on PlayStation. I still haven't played any version of 3. I still played Code Veronica. Excuse me again. I didn't finish the 2 remake, so I never finished Resident Evil 6. I never will. But so yeah, there's like some Resident Evils. I I might go back and play like original 3 or original 1 or Code Veronica or something after this, because I'm at least at this moment, I'm still kind of jonesing a little. I never really played the 4 remake either. There's still plenty of Resident Evils out there.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Very different remake from what I understand.
Yeah. I get in there and just reminding me like, oh yeah, Resident Evil's pretty great. Pretty great series. But yeah, and there should, like, supposedly, theoretically, the next remake that's coming is either going to be Zero or Code Veronica, which are both, like, pretty interesting, I think, from a remake perspective, in that Zero's one that people don't usually care too much for.
I have friends going through the series right now, and getting to Zero is hard.
I don't think Zero was that bad.
It's... like Zero and Code Veronica, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's just like, I mean, back to puzzles, I forget which one is a lot of like, just like running back and forth with the item. Now you get this item for that item, blah, 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 for like very little reward for like the puzzle solving and stuff like that. But
I just remember Zero had kind of the cool opening on the train.
Yes.
That was really interesting, and then you got to the mansion, which was, like, very by the numbers, like, nothing too surprising here.
Right.
And Veronica, I know little about, other than George saying how, like, he got to the end, but, like, got, like, he saved and didn't have enough ammo to deal with, like, the last boss and got or something like that.
You can, I think I've heard you can get borked out of that. Like, I played some of Veronica because we were pirating every Dreamcast game, but I
guess I remember hearing Veronica was hard is what I remember hearing about that game, that it was you could get yourself into some situations.
You have Veronica Zero, like just big disc, you know, release remaster would be interesting.
I did have a funny moment where like I was at a point with Grace where I was like really low on resources. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like out of healing stuff. Like I don't have any of these fucking injectors. I have none of this. Then I like looked in my item box and I'm like, oh, I've just been hoarding fucking everything in here. And I'm actually just stocked to the nines. And I'm just like, okay, I'm fine. Let me just craft some stuff real quick. Though I did again in the basement, I kind of like was running pretty thin on resources, which is probably why that segment also still felt pretty good.
Like she turns around with like 8 needles in the neck.
So, yeah, basically. and you could play that game like once there's a sale on it. You got a PS5. Yeah, I just forget about
exactly.
That. Yeah. Get used to that being like, yeah, there's a path here.
I know. Like it'll still take some years for things to get down in price enough for me to play. But like, PlayStation Plus also once they start putting good games back on there, they took a break after Alan Wake 2 for a little bit.
Yeah,
but I keep an eye month to month.
Dude. Yeah, that's all. That's all I really played.
Mm. Yeah,
that's it. Just those things, a bunch of them.
Right.
I played a couple of more games real quick. I installed a bootleg copy of Transformers Devastation on my Steam Deck because I wanted to play that game, and I own it in formats that I can no longer have access to, and I fucking cracked it and installed it, and it's great, and I love it. So I've been playing that. We finally tried this game.
Transformers moment here. Have you seen
that? Ready for a Transformers moment?
Have you seen that Devastation Bumblebee
figure? I mean, I haven't seen it in the wild. I don't think it releases until later this year, right?
Okay, all right. I couldn't figure out, like, I don't know. I've just seen people pouncing on pre-orders for it because it's a really good-looking figure.
That's right. People like, say it looks good.
I think it looks good.
I don't know if it looks better than the most recent Bumblebee, necessarily.
Like the 86 Bumblebee?
I don't think it looks bad, but I wouldn't say it looks markedly better than the 86 version.
Fucking Whis just disappears.
So speaking of GameStop,
I thought it looked pretty good.
Yeah, no, I don't think it looks bad, but I definitely think it's got that sort of cartoony plasticky look that Devastation Prime has, which again I don't hate, but I wouldn't say it's my favorite look.
I'll see what it looks like in person.
Yeah I think once it's available I will definitely probably pick it up, but GameStop finally filled my order for Studio 86 Megs. So I've had him sitting on my shelf for a while. But even cooler than that, possibly, is I finally was able to get a Siege Jetfire. And nice. He's incredible. He's enormous. He is just about as big as Devastator. And he's got this little removable mask, so you can see his cartoon face underneath. He's got this removable armor plate on the front that makes him look a little more like a Macross Valkyrie without being copyright infringing. The mask is on there tight. I can't quite get it. Oh, there we go. His mask off. There's his pretty face.
Nice. Yeah.
And I had already scored the Masterpiece Jetfire, which came out post Siege. And I didn't like him. He's even bigger and he's heavy, but he's also very like, man, I just love the styling of the Siege Kingdom era figures. I love how they've got just a little more detailing, to look a little more mechanical. I like it better than the very, very, very clean look that the more recent figures are going for, which also holds true for a lot of Masterpiece figures. So I'm loving the look of this American Girl doll sized fella here. So that's my and this was a cool touch that I've never seen on any other figure. So he doesn't have individual finger articulation really, but his fingers are sort of spread out a little bit to give the impression that he does. His guns are held in a little peg hole there. If you can see that peg hole disappears when you fully extend the fingers.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It's like the peg hole, so it pops in and out as needed.
Nice. Oh, that's clever.
It is clever. I like that. It's for a nice clean look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll let him do that.
Transformers Minute.
Yeah. Oh, sure. It's Dave's Transformers Minute. Yeah.
My Transformers Minute is over. You can have your Transformers Minute.
Yeah. So I did get my nice clean. Yep.
I do have to say, I do really like the clean look of these Seekers. I do think that looks very cool. There's something Starscream about it.
Yeah, well, it's like I don't have him transformed. Starscream is back in jet mode right now. And just putting the two next to each other, I'm just like, God, he freaking Skywarp looks so fucking good. Or Thunderbreaker.
Well, I never liked the Coronation Starscream mold, which I think was the Kingdom. I always preferred the Siege mold better. I thought it was a better robot mode.
His head's a little small. I think the jet looks good, though. The jet looks freaking great on him.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I ended up just weird. I wasn't going to. So this I've worked myself into a shoot on the Combaticons. Well, the thing is, I got Vortex just because I like Vortex. And then for some reason, Target was selling Voyager class figures at like 2025 Voyager class prices.
Oh, dang.
Because now Voyager figures are like almost $45. Yeah. And this was like whatever reason I just 36. Scanned it. It was 35. For whatever reason, all the Voyager figures were just like 35. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to grab Brawl.
They did have a 20% off sale across the board on Transformers a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, that must be
ago.
Why. I must have sprung on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I'm just like, well, shit. Now I'm two Combaticons deep. I might be in trouble.
You're in
now.
It to win it now.
Well, it's like, it's I'm also kind of like, time. There's very, I, you know, I wouldn't do this for Superion, cause Superion can get fucked, and nor Menasor, but Bruticus is like one of my other favorite combiners. So I'm like, okay, I can see myself going down this road.
Yeah.
I actually, the last thing I got,
beep,
get over here is the complete Blockies Defender series Bruticus.
He's very pretty, isn't he?
Yeah, these, God, and I lucked
colors.
Out.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I think I I really like the Blockies Defender, like how the combiners come together. Like the Devastator looks awesome. I lucked out with him because my toy store just had an open Onslaught, so I was able to just buy Onslaught, and then I got lucky. I was just like, you know what? I'm going to open a couple boxes because these figures are only like $3 a box. And I got Blast Off and Brawl. So I only had to source on the internet, Swindle and, Vortex. I did really well with Bruticus. getting him together. Felt really good about that.
So your toy store sells them for $3 a box?
They have them at Millennium has them for $3.
Really?
I believe. Yeah, I think so.
Hell. Get my ass to Millennium Games.
Yeah, my toy store chart is like $5 for the Defender series, but you know, that's that, you know. But he also, that's where I got Onslaught for just buying the figure that I needed. I'm not going to do this right now.
Never would have occurred to me to look at Millennium.
Yeah, they have an extensive blind box section, and they do have the Blockies at their MSRP prices. So, yeah, that is a place to check out.
Millennium Games, largest game store in the Northeast. One of the largest in the country, I believe.
Yeah, we stop there pretty much every time we're in Rochester. We swing by and poke around a little bit.
Is that a Blockies thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, sorry, this Transformers moment. No, I got, hang on, I got, because, get up here. Yeah, let's just.
Oh, man.
There are some Transformers 86 moments for the Twitch stream.
There's a just planet form Unicron, Unicron. And Unicron's head. With mouth articulation. Yeah, I got Triptychon down here.
That's a very nice Triptychon. Look at him.
Yeah. No, Triptychon. He's down here fighting Metroplex.
Oh, good. Yeah.
It's a good looking.
Good.
City versus city. Yeah.
Yeah. I got all three of the Insecticons now. And the Insecticons come with like little basically defender size versions of one of the other ones.
Oh,
so
cute.
Yeah. I got that whole series. Yeah. Those are pretty good. Anyways.
What is this defender distinction? Can you explain this to me?
Okay, so actually,
I have a hard time sorting out what lines are what.
Come here.
I'm almost a little afraid to start buying these things because I don't even know what I'm looking for because they're all so different.
All right, so they have. So what I'm talking about for the audio listeners is this series.
Here's
of
your Transformers 15 minutes, everybody.
Well, there's this company called Blockies or Blokies or whatever, Blockies that sells these little blind box figures. They do other things besides Transformers, but the Transformers line seems like it's been very popular. Mm-hmm. Overseas, they do some Marvel series that I've seen. In America, we only get like certain like larger like 12-inch size Marvel figures. They do Ultraman figures, some other ones. Either way. Transformer, so they have the Galaxy series, which here I have Bombshell, the Insecticon Bombshell. He's like yay big. These are usually, I actually don't know how much one of these figures costs because I always just buy the fucking box. I feel like they're like $7 or $8, like
yeah
is what they should be. So like the Defender series are smaller. This is a Defender Hound. So you can see he is wee.
Yeah.
He only comes up to the knee of Bombshell.
Yeah.
But also in the Defender series, you get they have some vehicle mode ones, which I don't have any of the vehicle mode ones handy because they're all combined into larger robots. But they started doing this thing. I mean, they do some that are just like, oh, here's robot mode. I think Richard has like a just the jet Skywarp, just a little Skywarp. But yeah, they sell just, you know, it's a smaller one of the things you can get is just like one of the vehicles. They did the entire Constructicon set. They did the entire Combaticon set. But to supplant the combiners, they sell like a separate set that's like, here's the Devastator kit. here's the Bruticus kit. So if you have all the pieces to it, you can put all of them together to make the combiner. So the Defender series are generally speaking, smaller figures.
Okay.
You'll see this all. Like, if you see them on the shelf, you'll be like, okay, they just started a line, which is called the Rollout line, which is just vehicles. I'm less interested in the Defender line, generally speaking, because, I don't know, just the Galaxy line is kind of a good size.
Okay.
And I've just been going in on the Defenders to try to get these robots
the
to make the to get the combiners okay. together. That's how they get me spending money on those little shit. But, you know, I've tried to be smart about it. I mean, I do think the smartest thing to do is just, like, wait till they're all out and then just buy the set on eBay for $50 or okay, whatever. Right. And then you get all of them at once without having to open a bunch of blind boxes and be disappointed. But sometimes I'm just into that shit. I can't help it.
Fun.
Sometimes it is part of the fun when I grab one and it's one of the ones I need. This is awesome. Yeah. And then there's the larger series models, like that Megatron that's hanging out over here. Yeah, they have a variety of sizes, but kind of the main small blind box ones are Galaxy, which are those figures, and the Defenders, which are a little bit
all right.
smaller.
That all makes sense to me now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did notice, because I remember you said you didn't like kind of the bobbly, oversized head appearance of some of the earlier ones. I've noticed they've made the proportion of the head a little bit smaller, because I was comparing, like, the early Optimus Prime and Megatron I got to the more recent ones that came out in the Transformers, the movie theme boxes, and their heads are, like, in better proportion.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they did change them a little bit. Wow. Yeah, I don't know if that was. I don't know if that's just a way they were like, well, we're releasing a Megatron and an Optimus every other set, so we need to do something to make them a little different. Or
it means they got my letters.
Feedback. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know where you went up here.
In the paper mail. I wrote them angry letters. Handwritten on stationery.
I put something in the post. All right, we're done talking about Transformers. Okay, all right. Moving on with the show.
I'm just imagining you getting all the rage out and then being like, oh shit, I need to buy stamps. I don't have a stamp.
I'm going to try to blaze through a couple things here. New Super Lucky's Tale, which is an older game.
Oh,
it's probably about 10 years old now. John Legend's wife, Chrissy Teigen, loves this game, apparently. And so we've always been meaning to try it, and I got it in a bundle recently, and we sat down and finally played it. And yeah, that's a super legit good platformer. That is a straight up, very like classic Nintendo / Rare N64 style, but prettier platformer. That is exactly what it's you would expect on the tin. Plays great, super charming, excellent game.
I think Richard enjoyed playing that on Game Pass a couple years ago.
Yeah, big recommend. Round Guard is a Peggle roguelike game. And while Jan and I got big into Peggle 20 years ago, I think when we got it on Xbox Live Arcade for the 360, and that was our cozy game that we'd kill an evening playing, bouncing balls off pegs and making rainbows come out of unicorns' asses. It was great. And Round Guard is, there are a few modern Peggle clones, and not everyone agrees on which ones have the preferable bouncy ball physics, but this one seems great. It's exactly what I would expect from an official PopCap Peggle game, and it's a roguelike, so there's, like, you get buffs, you get special abilities, runs different every time. It's fantastic. Big recommend if you have any fondness for Peggle.
PopCap is still around?
What?
PopCap is still around?
I don't...
The Peggle company?
Maybe.
I think they're owned by...
That's sense. Okay.
Yeah, they're owned by, like, EA or something.
Yeah, I thought EA scooped them up a long time ago.
Okay.
But,
I was just like, wow. Both of those names, a blast from the past.
Yeah, I know. Funny Raccoon Game is a game that I saw people talking about last week around St. Patrick's Day, because apparently it's from an Irish developer. I don't know. I saw, like, some of the Aftermath people talking about it and really digging on it. So we tried the demo, and my oldest, like, after an hour with this game, she's like, this game is my exact sense of humor. I love it so much. It is a like low poly, low resolution texture platformer that is just super janky in a lot of good ways. It is a mess. It is a piece of shit in a glorious eye searing way. Like it's a bad game, but all the choices are intentional. And if like, it reminds me a lot of like, this is either a very bizarre or random game on N64 and like, how the hell did this get published? Or something you might find in the early days of not like a flash game, cause it's not a flash game, but like Newgrounds maybe, I don't know, but it's got this very weird, like late '90s, early 2000s energy, that is hard for me to put my finger on. Exactly, but it tickled a very specific nostalgia in me, in that it is just loud, dumb fun from a bygone era, and we're having a great time with it. And last but not least is Pasta La Vista, which is a total conversion of Super Mario World. This is a fan game that's been worked on for a long, 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 long time. It is, so you start with a Super Mario World, a clean Super Mario World ROM, apply a ROM hack. It is an MSU1 game, which means it streams CD quality audio, so it completely replaces the soundtrack. Most Super NES emulators can run these now, these MSU1 chip games, where it just totally replaces the audio. Most games use this for soundtracks that take like the raw audio data from the SNES sound chip and uncompress it so that the samples are higher quality. So it's all the original soundtracks, just higher quality samples. Mm-hmm. This game just fully replaces the soundtrack. And it's so weird. So while it uses Mario World as the engine basis, it is a remake of Super Mario Brothers 1. With an art style that attempts to capture the original Japanese artwork. So the artwork that appeared on the Famicom box and also appeared on the US published How to Win at Super Mario Brothers guidebook that we probably all had when we were kids.
I have that.
Yeah. Yep. So it's a very, it's a gorgeous looking game. Very cool looking art style. But then the art style shifts every few levels and they try out some weird, funky things. And so it's exciting to play. You never really know what you're going to encounter on the next level, even though structurally it is just Super Mario Brothers 1 rebuilt in the Mario World engine. It was a total delight to read. This is the first time I've had a really good time replaying Super Mario 1. Because it was just this sort of unexpected treat. Like, what is the next level going to look like? I'm so excited to see it. So Pasta La Vista, it took a little working to get running, to find a clean ROM and run it through an IPS patcher and get it all up and going. But I'm glad that I did, because I had super fun with it. And it was a great game to play on Mario Day on March 10th.
Yes.
I have to wait a whole year.
March 10th lives on in your heart, I think. Mario Day. So, yeah.
Oh, that looks nice. That looks cool.
Yeah, the screenshots looked very nice.
Sorry if there's...
Yeah, they do a lot of cool things with lighting. Like, they apply... Mm-hmm. They bake some lighting into the sprites. In the castle levels, like, the flames illuminate Mario. They just bake it onto the sprites. It's a simple enough trick, but, like, it looks really good.
Please don't play. Okay. There we go. All right.
Yeah. Nice. Who's watched anything?
Yeah.
Not me.
I got a couple. Well, TV, I only have, I finished Korra season 3. That's good TV. My God. Like,
yep.
That's like, it's so good. Like, I know season 4 is also good, but
it is. Yeah. There's no. Yeah. 3 is like up there with like season 2 of Last Airbender. Is like one of the best seasons of the show.
Yep. Everything's clicking, all the characters are hitting hard, and like the fight scenes are just like, I forgot how good, just like throwaway fight scenes are just insane at that point. So
into the part of the show they didn't want to put on TV at all. It was so bad.
Yeah. Yep. Just... Yeah, I'm very hype at the moment. Definitely in the very waiting for trailer or slash trailers to drop for both the Aang movie and the new Avatar NAS. But yeah. I've got a couple episodes of Primal left. I'm not sure if this is the final season or not, so I'm kind of like, I don't know if I want to finish it off. But man, that show also very good. Saw that Project Hail Mary. I feel like that's the big one right now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good. I don't think I wasn't bowled over the way that a lot of people are right now, but it is charming as hell. Like it's kind of crazy. I spent a lot of the movie going like, Lord and Miller have kind of made Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs a bunch, and it always works. Like it's he still feels like the guy from Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs. Like he moves like him. Gosling does. They did a great job with, when the trailer came out and they revealed the alien, and I still kind of wish they didn't, because I thought that was kind of like...
Well, apparently, a lot of the people that read the book were, like, aghast that they had just showed it in the trailer.
Yeah, right. And I still wish they hadn't, but it is such a large part of the movie, and they did an incredible job with, like, the little rock guy and their relationship. Like, that is why that movie works. Mm-hmm. Like, point blank.
All practical sets, right? That's something that they boasted.
All practical. Yep. And like shot really, really well. I did not see IMAX, but very, very pretty. Like it's for, you know, like it's not being billed as a kid's movie, but it's kind of, like if this came out in the 80s, this would be a kid's movie, right? Like
really?
This is a funny alien buddy movie in space.
Huh.
Right. Like there's bigger themes, but I mean, you got it from the trailer, right? It's you know, like sun could go out. That's bad. Scientist goes into space to save. Like that is your tension. But like for the most part, it's not really adult sci-fi. Like it's really great in the same way that Andy Weir's The Martian is, you know, using science to fix problems. And it feels great to see people just doing that, doing equations, put more worth into science and all that.
I wonder if my kids... Jan is dying to see this movie. And there's very few new release movies that she's like, can we go see this movie? Because she loved The Martian. And
okay, yeah. No, I don't know if... I like The Martian slightly more. I feel like more people like this like more than The Martian. But no, I think Jan would love this. Kids, I'm
but
not
if we can bring the kids.
Sure. I think so. Like, I mean, there's nothing.
I think it's PG-13.
It's got to be PG-13. Like, I can't. Okay. It's a little long. So depending on how they feel about that, like
they're good.
You can definitely feel that. But
no, I looked at that length and I was like, oh, I don't know if I could drag my kid to this.
That's yeah. That's literally if it was under 2 hours, I think this would have been sold as a kid's movie.
Wow.
But
interesting.
No, it's just like I think everything is really well done. It just feels a little like I want it a little heavier on the sci-fi, but that's just kind of like preference.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, sort of thing.
That makes sense.
But everything's good. I really liked the commander that I hadn't. There was a lot of people aside from Gosling that I had not seen before. I'm sure they have wonderful careers. But like it wasn't like, you know, a star-studded cast across the board.
You're not IMDBing in your head constantly as you're watching.
Right.
That's a great thing.
Yep.
It's refreshing.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was a big one. I saw... you could watch it on YouTube if you like. I'm not sure if anybody else was into Gorillaz and their music / video projects through the years, but...
I've not kept up with it all, but...
So the new album, but this new video is awesome. Like it's again back to like it was done specifically to be, you know, all 2D and to kind of throw back. Like it's very much a Jungle Book, but the gorillas kind of shine on it, like a 8-9 minute like short film sort of thing. And it if you follow Gorilla's stuff, like it definitely encompasses kind of the career as it's been going. So like that stuff's very cool. But just as like, you know, like like The Wall or whatever, you know, like it's very much like kind of a throwback 60s, 70s, like long, like psychedelic song on an album kind of thing. So just really cool animation that's just sitting there on YouTube.
We caught their performance on SNL last
weekend. Yes, I did that too.
They played some clips of that in the background during that song, I remember. And we all, including my oldest, because we're big fans of Demon Days in this house.
Yeah,
it gets a lot of play around here. So we really enjoyed watching those performances. So our last long car ride, I put on the new album. And they were like, "What is this?" And I said, "It's Gorillaz. Really? You know, we saw them on TV last week, remember?" And they're like, "I don't think we like this."
See, for me, this was like the best one since like Plastic Beach. Yeah. You know, like this is like, I also got the album like the day I got the car. So I was like playing it like endlessly. But like, I don't know. I was surprised how much I liked this album versus what they've
I mean, I'm going to keep listening to it, but I'm going to have to do it on my own because I had three people in that car with me who were like, "I don't know, Dad."
See, watching that performance has now turned Richard onto Gorillaz, so he's been requesting that in the car. So, I mean, we started from the beginning.
And the Clint Eastwood one was like the first time they got Del the Funky Homo Sapien on there. Yeah, that was sick. Got to see that Kiki's Delivery Service. They did a 4K re-release in theater. Yeah, that is
nice.
Gorge. what can you say? Like, any other director would put this movie out, that would clearly be their best movie, and you're like, "Yeah, Kiki's, it's great."
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, just gotta roll past it. Definitely worth just seeing in the theater if you can. Like
there's definitely a generation of kids right now that are growing up with Studio Ghibli being their like main touchstone for animated movies. And my sample size for that is me and like the people in my group chat. But I don't know about when we were growing up, it's like, okay, 2D Disney was still a thing, and that's not really a thing anymore. So yeah, I'm sure it's like, yeah, you subject your kids to subject them, Jesus Christ, to expose. You know, expose them to like early Pixar stuff, and whatnot. But it's like, yeah, for Richard, you know, we didn't have a library of those of old Disney movies, but.
Right.
Like we had a kid saw Princess Mononoke when he was like 4 years old. He was not ready for that shit. But
no, I hear a lot of, I mean, like there's a generation that's grown up with Miyazaki. I mean, like us specifically, Mononoke was the first big one to come over.
Yeah.
And like, we were like 15, 16.
Yeah.
Something like that, I think. Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, so, you know, he like Spirited Away and Totoro and Kiki's and just so many of those movies. Those are the movies he watched ad nauseum.
Yeah.
When he was little. And like, yeah, my one friend was talking about how he's like, I have watched Ponyo like 5 times this week. when does that stop? And we were like, it doesn't really. It does. You just have to try to get them on different movies every now and then.
I have to resoundingly, as much as I am loath to admit it, I mean, it's not really, whatever, it's fine.
Let's see.
The whole Ghibli library being on HBO Max is a big reason why my kids were willing to give it a chance. Like, it's honestly the availability of them in a digital library, risk-free, they're just there. Okay. We can take them or leave them. I think it would have been a harder sell for me otherwise to be like, okay, ooh, let's borrow this Blu-ray from the library, kids. Let's look at this. Mm-hmm. When it's as accessible on a digital format that, like, I can show them the trailer or they can see a little clip of it first, and or we can just start the movie and just start watching it and without any prelude at all. And I'm like, no, trust me, this is going to be a good movie. And that went such a long way toward my kids loving those movies. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it would have happened organically without them being so readily available on streaming.
So that's the time we had them available on streaming, like it was just a convenience to be like, oh, I don't have to get the discs out.
Because I didn't have any of the discs. I don't have any personal history with Ghibli films.
I don't know where they all came from
when I was a kid. You don't know where they came from? They were Lauren. Did Lauren bring them into your marriage?
I think we started getting like there was a point where her mom gave us like a cardboard box full of like old DVDs and Blu-rays. Okay. I'm guessing there was maybe one or two of them in there. And I think we had Howls because that's one of Lauren's favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And then it was just like, oh, Richard likes this. Well, let's go grab another one like next time we're out, you know?
Yeah.
Just kind of adding a couple more to the collection,
and
I think,
but a small library,
and then suddenly it's like, yeah, we have a bunch of them in the house.
I mean, it's hard. Obviously, I like physical media, but like every hobby, it's expensive to be a completist on that stuff. I think like one of the nice things is like us not having grown up with the versions that were out when we were kids is that those dubs were terrible. I went to rewatch the just the intro like title screen for Kiki's when I went home, because it's surprised me. I'd forgotten, like, it's just like, you know, she's just like, hey, I should turn on the radio, turns on the radio, and it's playing like 50s music. And it was just like, oh, that's so nice. It's just like, it feels really good. And then I played like the dub, and like the cat won't shut up. And like in a voice that's just like trying to sell t-shirts, and like the song wasn't the same song. And like, it was just like, it was so bad. Like, I know that there is some good work with like the Disney dubs, but they've all been reworked through the years. Yeah. And I think like you can find a good version in both languages now.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Yeah.
For sure. Last thing I watched on Criterion Channel, there's a great movie / it's more of a video essay just on old video stores called Video Heaven from Alex Ross Perry. If you got Criterion Channel fired up, it's just, you know, I like, even though it's pretty mean to Blockbuster, so am I. So, there's a lot of good discussion about areas of the country that only had Blockbuster, and of course that got you into film, and you have to go with, and also they had like 5 movies and 12 copies of those 5 movies, and they bought out small video stores, and you know, like they Walmarted / Starbucked up the place. So like, but it was the most in-depth like story of the video store I've seen.
I was explaining video stores to Richard for some reason, like in the last week. Mm-hmm. Just the idea that like, yeah, you'd go in and you'd pay like a couple bucks, and you'd rent a movie for the night. Maybe I was telling him about how Family Video used to exist like right up the street, because now it's like a rheumatology place or something like that. And like, yeah, that's, you know, what we used to do and how we'd play games. Like, you know, you'd go Friday night and grab some movie from the video store and a pizza, and that was your evening.
I'm lucky enough to be in the type of city that has a video store or two left, but it's, you know, it's the same as vinyl, right? You know, it's niche stores. Like the movie did a good job of like even showing like through the years, it's like when a video store was shown in like the 90s or like early aughts, it was like kind of romantic and people were like kind of meeting up there. And then slowly it just became this sign of like, oh, you want to show that somebody's out of touch, or like using them in media in like what that represented was really interesting. Even think about, you know, like those Seinfeld episodes, like, you know, like the mystique of the back room of the adult section and explaining you know, just the social cues that came with that. The sitcomness of like fumbling around like the videotape under the other videotapes and all that shit.
It's funny to think. I mean, we obviously we had Mr. Video in town.
Yep, hell yeah, we did.
But like that, Wegmans, the supermarket, used to have a video rental section, slash game rental section. That would be like, I just can't. It's so hard to imagine that fitting in the middle of a store.
I literally was trying to find those videos on YouTube to see if there was any footage of, because I was trying to like picture, because I mean, like if I rented games, that's where I rented games from, because it was there.
Well, that was like during the summer. It's like, you do a 7-day rental when we'd go to the supermarket once a week because it was a half hour away. And then I'd bring it back when we went back the next week and get something else for the next week. Yeah, I'm just like imagining it where like the Nature's Marketplace would be in the Wegmans that I go to, kind of tucked behind the pharmacy or whatever. It's just wild. Those were the days. That's about Dave. You watch anything? Was there anything you'd watch?
Or
was
only just real quick, Weiss, I wanted to let you know that we are very slowly picking our way through the Lowdown, but loving it.
Oh, cool. Cool. That's
feels
awesome.
Very like it's kind of like the closest thing to a new season of Fargo that I think we're likely to get in the best possible way, but also it, you know, is very much its own thing because obviously Sterling Harjo is not aping Hawley's style at all. They just, it's parallel thought, you know, it's parallel noirishness, and so we're loving it. Just evening activities mostly with the kids of forced pick our way through.
It's a good sense of humor, right?
Love it. And then I don't believe I had finished A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms by the time last podcast. I've since finished that first season and am confident saying it has big Mandalorian season one energy, like when that show was still full of promise and hope, and was kind of like, oh, you know, when Mandalorian season one was like, this is what we want from Star Wars now, a sort of fresh, you know, throwback to everything that we love about Star Wars with none of the, you know, cruft of the fandom that's built up, which Filoni would, you know, meticulously sew back in over the course of the next few years. But yeah, just a wonderful, like, all killer, no filler, a story about a virtuous man trying to protect a child in a lawless world. Like, that's the whole story. Very much like Mandalorian season one. And that's just it. Just it's super endearing, you know, wonderful entry, completely stands alone. You don't need to know anything about Game of Thrones to enjoy it, but also is, you know, probably a perfect entry point into the world. Super enjoyed that series. So.
No, I've heard nothing but positive at this point. And like my brain has been shut off from Rings of Power And so I've still never seen a trailer, but I'm excited to see it. And any play on Lone Wolf and Cub, like you said, like a warrior protecting kid always works.
Yeah.
Like it's such a good formula.
Yeah. Yep. Works great.
Like I haven't even watched much of Mandalorian, but I'm watching the trailer for Mandalorian and Grogu going like, I'll see that.
That looks like a romp. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a good time.
Yep. And that's it for me.
I'm out.
I just want Star Wars to be enjoyable without discourse anymore.
Well, good. That's why you need new franchises. Yeah,
I guess. Yeah.
Too much baggage at this point.
Not look at the internet.
That too.
Yeah, well, that's going to do it for this episode, ladies and gents. Thank y'all for listening. Dave's on vacation next week.
Yeah.
Hey.
I'm on vacation the week after that.
Hey.
Spring breaks don't align by county this year.
Oh, wow. Sister's coming up the following week after, because that's when her vacation is.
Yeah. Uh-huh. My brother, you know, and his kids, they're off. It must be like Wayne and Monroe County are off next week, and certain other counties are off the week after Easter or before Easter. So
I think ours is like already happened. Like, I believe it was last, like it might time out with South by Southwest just for convenience. I have heard spring break bandied about. So whatever. Doesn't change my life.
Catch y'all next month.
Thanks so much for joining us, everyone.
Yeah.